This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Melton. An Iranian-backed militia is vowing revenge after U.S. military airstrikes on fighters in Iraq and Syria. AP's Sagar Meghani reports from the Pentagon.
Pentagon Chief Mark Esper says the military took action yesterday in retaliation for a rocket attack that killed an American contractor in Iraq.
By launching F-15 Strike Eagles against five targets associated with Kitab Hezbollah.
What Esper calls an Iranian-sponsored militia group. A militia spokesman, though, says it was not behind the attack in Iraq and elsewhere, saying Washington is looking for a pretext to attack. He's calling the airstrikes a crime and massacre and insists the group will get revenge for evil American aggression. Sagar Meghani at the Pentagon.
The family of the man accused of attacking a Hanukkah celebration in New York is speaking out. AP's Rita Foley.
Grafton Thomas's family says he's mentally ill and has a long history of hospitalizations. He's accused of storming into a rabbi's home in Muncie, north of New York City, and stabbing five people as they celebrated Hanukkah. Thomas's family says he's never been convicted of a crime, is not a member of any hate group, and has no known history of anti-Semitism. In a statement issued by an attorney, the family expressed its concern and prayers for the injured. Meanwhile, Thomas remains in jail. He's pleaded not guilty to five counts of attempted murder. I'm Rita Foley.
The al-Shabaab militant group has claimed responsibility for carrying out Saturday's truck bomb attack in Mogadishu, Somalia, which killed at least 90 people and wounded some 125 others. Al-Shabaab's official spokesman said the group's target was a Turkish convoy and security forces. Turkey has been training members of the Somali army. You're listening to VOA News. Hong Kong protests show no sign of slowing as the city heads into 2020. Reuters' Libby Hogan has more.
The protesters say they won't end until all five demands have been met. These include an independent inquiry into the police handling of the protests and amnesty for arrested protesters. Since June, police have arrested 6,060 people in total. The police say they've been restrained with an appropriate use of force. They've defended their conduct, including firing water cannons and tear gas, in response to what they call escalating illegal and violent acts of protesters.
That's Reuters' Libby Hogan. The White House says Russian President Vladimir Putin called U.S. President Donald Trump to thank him for information that helped foil a potential terrorist attack in Russia. Russian media cited the Federal Security Service as saying two Russians were detained because of the U.S. tip. The Taliban says it does not intend to stop fighting in Afghanistan, rejecting as false and baseless reports the insurgent group is ready to declare a temporary ceasefire in a bid to seal a peace deal with the United States. The announcement comes on a day when Taliban insurgents killed at least 14 Afghan security forces in the latest of a series of deadly assaults over the past week. A Sudanese court on Monday sentenced 27 members of the country's security forces to death by hanging for torturing and killing a detained protester. The verdict can be appealed. It was the first connected to the killing of more than 200 pro-democracy protesters since anti-government demonstrations began last December. Neil Innes, a frequent collaborator with British comedy team Monty Python, has died. AP correspondent Ben Thomas has more.
Neil Innes wasn't one of the principal members of Monty Python, but he popped up so often and in such memorable roles, he was sometimes called the Seventh Python. Here, playing the leader of Sir Robin's Minstrels in Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Later, he partnered with Eric Idle to create the Beatles parody group, The Ruddles. A statement from his family says Innes died of natural causes Sunday night, quickly and without warning. Neil Innes was 75. To be an idiot. I'm Ben Thomas. How sweet.
I'm Marissa Melton. You've been listening to VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Paul Alexander in Washington, sitting in for James Buddy. Today is Tuesday, December 31st, the last day of 2019, and here are some of the stories we're covering. The latest attack in the eastern DRC has killed 18 people, again hampering efforts to control the Ebola outbreak there. And a planned opposition protest in the tense Liberian capital has been postponed for a week.
We were pressured, but out of respect for the international community, not the government, because we do not regard the government lies, the government steals.
That was Henry Costa, leader of the opposition Council of Patriots in Liberia, on the reason for the postponement. There's been a move to change the name of the CFA currency in West Africa, and Botswana has seen a rise in rhino poaching.
And I was surprised that soon after I left office, they were disarmed. Their weapons were taken. So, and these poachers will also, from my experience, they're not shy to take on those who are protecting our wildlife.
That was former Botswana President Ian Khama on disarming some anti-poaching units. We'll also hear about seven Eritrean football players refusing to return home after a football tournament in Uganda, and a new app is helping young Nigerians save money. The latest attack in the eastern DRC has killed up to 20 people, again hampering efforts to control the Ebola outbreak in the area. The Islamist group Allied Democratic Forces has launched a series of attacks in response to a military offensive to roust them from the area. The attack occurred Sunday night in Apatina, a remote forested area near the Uganda border. One official says the victims were hacked to death. The site is in the volatile Beni region, where attacks have frequently forced medical personnel to take shelter. That has allowed the 17-month-old Ebola outbreak to resume just as it was being reined in. The government has put troops in medical facilities, leaving the medical group Doctors Without Borders to halt its operations rather than be associated with the military operating in an opposition stronghold. Amid rising tensions, organizers postponed a protest that was expected yesterday in the Liberian capital, Monrovia. The Council of Patriots says it's deferring the protest to next Monday based on advice from Liberia's diplomatic partners. Even though the protest was delayed, activity in the city was slow as people stayed away because of the buildup. Moses Garcia Wu reports from Monrovia.
Monrovia's streets were deserted as joint security forces were posted at locations that had been expected gathering points for the protesters. Security personnel dispersed handfuls of people gathering throughout the city. The only point of action was at the closed offices of Roots FM, a radio station operated by the opposition councillor Patriots head Henry Costa. There, his supporters chanted slogans. The ambassador of the United States of America, the European Union, ECOWAS, and the resident coordinator of the United Nations called for a delay for the protest by the Council of Patriots and a counter-protest by the Independent Council of Patriots. They had urged the COP to shift the protest date to January 5 at a venue the government approved to ensure the rights of all Liberians are respected. COP leader Henry Costa told VOA they were pressured but accepted out of respect for the international community.
We were pressured, but out of respect for the international community, not the government, because we do not regard the government lies, the government steals, but we respect the international community because they have been here, they've invested in our peace and stability in this country, and they're saying they're concerned about our safety, and they want to make sure we exercise our right.
Mr. Costa said while the COP is accepting the pleas from the international community, it will not hold the protest next Sunday, as was proposed.
We want to make sure that the December 30th protest passes off as peacefully as June 7th did. But we are saying we don't want the 5th, we want the 6th, Monday the 6th. So today is a success. January 6th, Monday, which we know they will accept, when we come out, businesses will also be closed. And the world will know that we're not happy with the way this footballer-turned-president is running our country.
The government says it will only accept the new date agreed on by the international community and the different parties. Boakai Fofana is the Deputy Minister for Technical Services at the Liberia Ministry of Information.
Well, the government of Liberia has given a clear time frame to the Minister of Justice, and those time frames were clearly communicated. those dates as stipulated in the Ministry of Justice pronouncement. And so if there were further change, obviously that's a determination that will be made later.
Mr. Fofana also hailed mediation efforts by diplomats, but said the government had already made similar proposal to the protesters.
We welcome the effort of all of these different partners, but the government had previously said before their joint statement that it was deferring a decision on the granting of permit to a later date, you know, and that would have been sometime in January.
The Council of Patriots says it wants a response from President George Weah on issues of governance, corruption, and the economy. But Fofana said the president had already taken actions on some of the most sensitive issues. Amos Kane was on hand today to watch the council demonstration and had a message for the president.
You are the president of this country. You got the power. What you need to do is to sit around the table of the protesters and let them amicably resolve whatever they got on their document to present to you so that you can see about it.
The cancellation of the protests brought some relief to residents as tensions were running high between opposition and government supporters. But it caught into commerce as several businesses were closed and fewer government employees reported for work, despite the government's early morning announcement that it was a normal day. President Weah's government has seen more protests than those of his recent predecessors as he grapples with the economic challenges confronting the country. Moses Gazio, VOA News, Monrovia.
The main opposition Malawi Congress Party, MCP, is urging supporters to remain calm once the Constitutional Court rules on its challenge of the presidential election's outcome. Party spokesman Maurice Muntali says that was the message from party leaders at a rally in Doha in the central region. The pronouncements come after MCP supporters joined demonstrations organized by the Human Defenders Forum, the HRDC, a political pressure group, seeking the ouster of Elections Commission Chairperson Justice Jane Ansa for allegedly bungling the election. MCP presidential candidate Lazarus Chakwera and former Vice President Saulos Chilima from the United Transformation Movement, UTM, claimed the election was tainted by voter irregularities and rigging. The Electoral Commission declared incumbent President Arthur Peter Mutharika the winner. The Constitutional Court is expected to rule on the challenge early next year. Muntali tells VOA's Peter Claudi that supporters are being asked to wait patiently.
The rally you are referring to was actually spearheaded by the Member of Parliament in the Doha Southeast constituency, Mrs. Halima Dawoodi. But it was significant because it is one of those big rallies that have taken place after the hearing of the court has been done. So, yes, any rally that is happening now after the court hearing had risen is very, very important for us, because one of the things that we do and want to communicate to our members is that they should remain calm. They should continue to support Dr. Lazarus Chakwera, support Malawi Congress Party. But in as far as the issue at the court is concerned, we are communicating to them that they should wait patiently, but also hopefully, because what we are seeking at the courts of law is just. And when it is justice and it is seen to be justice, it has to be for the good of everybody in this country.
Well, some people are saying that the rally held by the MCP is a mere publicity stunt, particularly when it has been supporting demonstrations and protests that have led usually to clashes with security officers. So on the one hand, you said you want your supporters to remain peaceful, but on the other hand, you are encouraging your supporters to go on demonstrations in protest of the election results. How do you respond to that?
Surely that would be a misconception of exactly what the Malawi Congress Party is all about and what it is trying to communicate. We have always said in regard to demonstrations that demonstrations are not spearheaded by the Malawi Congress Party. Demonstrations are, in the first place, a people's right, a constitutional right for that matter, and it is the HRDC that are spearheading those demonstrations. But as Malawi Congress Party, we have always said, if it is in the constitution and it is their constitutional right, let people demonstrate, as long as they are demonstrating peacefully. In this particular case, we are only communicating one language, and that language is, let us remain calm, let us remain hopeful, as we await justice from the court. And in referring to justice, what we mean is, let the court or the Constitutional Court bring a verdict that will really represent what is known as justice in its real face and in its real meaning. Because we have seen verdicts from the courts that have been quashed by other courts, which means not every verdict is known as justice, because definitely we will want to expect nothing else but justice. In this case, we are not saying that we are going to say no when justice has been ushered upon Malawians from the Constitutional Court.
So whatever happens if this justice that you seek doesn't go your way as planned and your supporters get rowdy, what will the MCP do?
The Malawi Congress Party believes that justice doesn't have two faces and it doesn't wear any negative face, as long as it is justice, because even if it can be painful, but as long as everybody believes that this is really justice, then you have no choice, including Malawi Congress Party, to embrace that justice, to accept the verdict. But you will understand, as much as I do and every Malawian, that it is not everything that comes from the courts of law that can be interpreted as 100% justice. That is because those who are judges are also human. So all we are saying is, we are even praying for the five judges that God should guide them so that they can answer justice. And if it is justice, it will wear one face. And that one face is justice.
That was Maurice Munthali, the spokesperson for the main opposition Malawi Congress Party. He spoke with VOA's Peter Claudi from Mzuzu. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Paul Alexander in Washington, and today is Tuesday, December 31st. Debate on the future of the CFA franc and the six-member Central African Economic and Monetary Community, CEMAC, has intensified after eight West African countries agreed to change the name of their common currency to ECO. They also severed the CFA franc's links to former colonial ruler France. The CFA franc is used by West and Central African states and is considered by many as a sign of French interference in its former African colonies, and the main reason for the underdevelopment of CEMAC, which remains the poorest economic bloc in Africa. Moki Edwin Kinseka reports from Yaoundé.
Last week's announcement by Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara in Abidjan, in the presence of the visiting French President Emmanuel Macron, that eight West African countries had agreed to change the name of their common currency to ECO, has dominated media debates in Cameroon. Louis Nsonkeng, a researcher and economic lecturer at the University of Bamenda, Cameroon, says when the ECO becomes legal tender, the eight West African states will have their final freedom from the strong grip of former colonial master France. He says the six Central African states that also use the CFA franc should immediately emulate the example of the West Africans.
In 2017, International Monetary Fund published the 10 richest countries in Africa. None of the countries was coming from a safe zone. And most of these countries had their own currency. If we discover that we don't have the resources to manage a common currency, then we should dissolve the currency area. We should dissolve it and each country should decide on their own currency.
Cameroon, Chad, Gabon, Equatorial Guinea, Central African Republic and Congo use the CFA franc. The CEMAC member states have more than 50% of their financial reserves kept in the French treasury following agreements signed in 1948. Thomas Babisakana, a Cameroon economist and financial expert, says such agreements drain the economies of Central African states because France now uses the euro, yet France still controls its currency. He says it is unthinkable that a country will claim it has its independence when its currency, which is an essential instrument for its economic policies, is controlled by a former colonial master. He says countries that still have the CFA franc as legal tender should immediately stop stocking their reserves in France and ask all French citizens who are working in the central banks of their former colonies following outdated conventions to leave. The CFA franc was created in 1945. It is considered by many as a sign of French interference in its former African colonies, even after the countries became independent. In 1999, the CFA franc's value was fixed at about 660 CFA francs to 1 euro. Daniel Onah-Ondo, president of the CEMAC Commission, says the six member states' economic growth rate is estimated at 3% in 2019, up from barely 1% in 2018, and inflation remains under control at less than 3%. He says the most demanding issue is to consolidate regional integration before thinking of currency reforms.
President Idriss Déby Itno avait envoyé une commission de haut niveau.
He says Chadian President Idriss Déby, who has always insisted on the creation of an African currency, negotiated with his Central African peers. They sent a high-profile delegation to the International Monetary Fund to explain the importance of having a more independent and stronger regional financial bloc as a way of ensuring the economic stability of Central African states that use the CFA franc and fighting against poverty. He says after deep reflection, the issue of a single currency is under review, but is not urgent. The CFA franc was pegged to the French franc until 1999, when it then became tied to the euro. 14 West and Central African countries, divided into two monetary unions, ECOWAS and CEMAC, use the CFA franc. Critics have often said the regions, especially Central Africa, which is the poorest among the five African economic blocs, should stop using the CFA franc. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
With wildlife poaching on the rise in Botswana, the country's government has appealed to conservation groups and the private sector to lend a hand to help protect targeted species. At least 13 rhinos have been killed since October, forcing the government to deploy more armed troops in affected areas. From Gaborone, Botswana, Mkondisi Dube has more.
Botswana's government says more soldiers will be deployed in the vast Okavango area to the northwest of the country. This is where at least 13 rhinos were killed between October and December. At least 31 of the animals have been killed since October 2018. The Botswana Defense Force BDF anti-poaching units killed 7 poachers recovering rhino horns and weapons in the process. Botswana has asked conservation groups and the private sector to play a more prominent role in protecting its estimated 400 rhino population. And some conservation groups are more than willing to help the government repel the poachers. Kalahari Conservation Society Chief Executive Officer Neil Fitt says the private sector has an important role to play.
Some NGOs and CSOs, as well as the private sector, are involved, but at a very low level, in assisting the government with poaching in Botswana, mainly around the Delta. Other NGOs and CSO, Botswana-based NGO CSOs, would be very willing and able to assist the government if the government opens the door and allows us to.
Mep Ives of the group Rhino Conservation says they're partnering with the government in the fight against poaching.
Rhino Conservation Botswana is assisting, our monitoring teams are assisting the BDF by supplying trackers and aircraft to fly over the area and see if we can locate the poachers, who appear to be foreign-based.
Last year, the government disputed reports that the rise in poaching was due to the disarming of some anti-poaching units. Former President Ian Khama believes the move contributed to the rise in poaching.
And I was surprised that, you know, soon after I left office, they were disarmed. Their weapons were taken away. So, and these poachers will also, from my experience, on the times on the BDF, they're not shy to take on those who are protecting our wildlife.
But officials insist they have zero tolerance for poaching and are prepared to adopt stern measures to protect the country's wildlife. The rhino horn fetches more than 50,000 on the black market, particularly in Asian countries, where it is believed to have medicinal value. Mqondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
Seven Eritrean football players refused to return home after a football tournament in Uganda this month. This is part of a trend of young people leaving the country to seek asylum or refuge in neighboring countries. Salim Solomon has this story.
After another defection of Eritrean football players during a tournament in Uganda, an official said that it has become expected that athletes from the Horn of Africa country will flee when traveling abroad.
It's been kind of routine over the past several years. Whenever there is an event, sports event, where Eritreans take part, it's almost a mark that some of them will not return home.
That was Ismael Dabaka, spokesperson for Uganda's National Council for Sports. Seven Eritrean footballers defected during a regional tournament known as SEKAFA Senior Challenge Cup. This followed the October defection of four players from Eritrea's under-20 team who were competing in Uganda. Dakaba said he's been told by an Eritrean footballer that team members are required to sign a letter promising to return home while playing in foreign tournaments. He also said the team travels with a group of bodyguards meant to prevent defections. However, they find ways to escape. Dakaba said Uganda's relatively welcoming stance towards refugees and asylum seekers and economic opportunities make it an attractive destination.
It's a very easy country to live in. You always find a place to start and you don't need to have a lot of money to live in Uganda normally. You can go with a bare minimum. So they find life here much better than in their country. That's why most of them decide to stay.
The Eritrean Minister of Information, Yemane Gebremeskel, has tweeted about success of the team during the tournament. However, he has not commented on the players that defected. Government officials did not respond to a VOA request for comment on the matter. Additionally, Alimsa Gedefrem, the Eritrean football coach, was invited to appear on a sports show on a state-owned media for a discussion about the tournament, and there was no mention of the players who never made it back home. Kimberly Motley, an American attorney, representing the four football players who defected in October, said she has been told by her clients that life inside Eritrea is heavily restricted. Most people enter military service between the ages of 16 to 17 and can be forced to serve indefinitely. Arbitrary arrests are commonplace, and footballers are hesitant to congregate while not on the pitch for fear of arousing suspicion. She said her clients fear for the safety of their families at home.
They're very much in fear of their safety. They are very much, unfortunately, under the thumb of the government, like everyone in Eritrea. And they're very, very concerned also about their families.
She added her clients are fearful that they will be returned to Eritrea by Ugandan authorities or attacked by Eritrean agents in Uganda.
These are good young men, most of them teenagers, who are simply fighting for their own freedom and the freedom to live, the freedom to play sports, the freedom to just be who they want to be. And they just want their basic human rights to be honored, which everyone on this planet should be entitled to.
Salim Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
And that's it for this Tuesday, December 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. It's the last day of 2019, and we look forward to you spending the coming new year with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Paul Alexander in Washington, wishing you will have a very good new year.
The 62nd Annual Grammy Awards Show is coming up. To celebrate, Border Crossings will play songs from the winners of the 2019 American Music Awards to refresh you on some of last year's best tracks. Tune in to hear from your favorite artists like Post Malone, BTS, and Taylor Swift, January 23rd on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.